Diego.
His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj Ki. His Holiness Chandrasekhar Swami. His Holiness Chandramali Swami. His Holiness Bhakti Taru Maharaj. His Holiness Bir Krishna Swami. All of His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami's God brothers and God sisters, we welcome you to Sri Gita Nagari Dham. And sitting behind the Swamis, we have Mother Saudamini from Philadelphia. And she also represents His Grace Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. Yeah. So at this point of the program, we would like to ask our esteemed guest to share some memories about His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami. And we would like to start with His Holiness Bhakti Taru Maharaj. Okay. His Holiness Chandrasekhar Swami, would you like to begin, please?
Where to begin? My last memory that I remember, actually getting some time with Bhakti Tirtha Swami, was actually right here in Gita Nagari. I came, I forget exactly why I was here, it was about a year ago, I believe it was. I was staying downstairs in the room at the Institute, and I came into the upstairs, and he was there, and he embraced me, and I remember asking him some questions about some difficulties that I was hearing from other devotees, how to minister to them in a nice way, and I don't want to get too much into detail about that, but it was a very warm episode. Any time that I ever encountered Bhakti Tirtha Swami, one of the things that I remember about being in his association was how warm he was. Actually, this is definitely the whole theme of his life. So he was someone that was very expert in learning how to give love to others in all kinds of unexpected ways. And even sometimes in a very quiet way, where you couldn't point to any particular detail about anything he said or did, but you just knew that he had a very strong love, and he was trying to communicate that through his speech, through his caring, and through his interest in things that might have otherwise been trivial or unimportant, or at least from his point of view, might have been trivial or unimportant. So he spoke about a few things to me. I was talking to him about someone that I'd heard that was thinking about committing suicide, how to minister to them. He had some of his own realizations about that. And he spoke about his own realizations. Actually, one point he told me that he himself had thought about committing suicide at one point in his life. But we all come to these realizations, and I think the strongest realization I have about my association with Bhakti Tirtha Swami is the fact that he was somehow tireless in his optimism and tireless in his giving of love to others. And I think that's one of the challenges that we all have, is to somehow or other, as his lecture was just now, to try to follow that school of love, to try to become something like that. And in the Catholic Church, they have patron saints. I think in one sense he's a patron saint of love for one's God brothers and God sisters. And so I'm praying to get some tiny smattering of that ability. He was so expert at that ability to make people feel like he cared about them and that he loved them, and he didn't really have any particular platform under which he would withdraw that love. It's a very valuable substance, a very valuable commodity. Maybe one of these days I'll be able to appreciate everything that he tried to give me. On that particular occasion, he gave me some of his books, and I read through a part of one, and I'm working on finishing that collection, because there were so many things he had to teach. He was always ready to explain things, usually about the most important things that devotees have, the difficulties we have in relationships, because relationships are the most difficult, particularly with devotees. If we get that one thing right, then we're a sure shoe-in to go into the spiritual world. If somehow we can't get that one right, then I think somehow or other we'll never make it there, the spiritual world. So someone who's a relationship doctor, someone who's able to understand the school of love and give it to others, that person is a very essential person. That's, I think, what I'd like to share. I can pass the microphone then to whoever's next in this line.
Om Gyan Timirandasya Gina Jina Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadanti Swam Patantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Ghor Bhaktivindam Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj ki. I was fortunate in many ways, and then I had a lot of association with Maharaj, especially in the last 8 years. And when he left, I felt a part of me also left. I was quite devastated by his departure, because he shared a lot with me and he helped me a lot in my devotional life. And I always remember that and I'll always appreciate that. And our relationship goes back many, many years to when he was preaching in Washington, D.C. back in the late 80s and even before then, but really our relationship started to develop around that time, the early 90s. And there's one story that was really a powerful experience in my life, which he was very instrumental in bringing about. And that I was preaching in Cincinnati, Ohio, back in the early 90s. And I had been running a preaching center there for a few years. We had the center in the late 80s and early 90s. And at one point, there was a question of whether I can continue in my service in that center or as a sannyasi to go out and travel and preach. And so there was a dilemma, because there was responsibility, there were people who were coming, there were commitments, and at the same time, there was this question of whether I should continue then or actually take up more of the role of the sannyaswara and to travel and preach. So remembering the principle of devotional service, that is, when you're making a major decision, you should consult your God brothers, seniors, and to try to get their, you know, direction, their blessings. So I did. And I spoke with many devotees. And I got answers from both sides. No, you should stay in the center and continue. No, you should go out and travel and preach. And it was difficult for me to make the decision because I was waiting for that, what we say, to hear the voice of Krishna clearly. And having approached so still somewhat indecisive, I remember I went to Washington, D.C., and I came to Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. He was in his room one day. And in somewhat of a, you know, a concerned way, and really determined to try to figure out how I should proceed, I presented my question to him. And he just stood up, he waved his arm in the air, and said, "Go out and preach." And I heard the voice of Krishna. And that was what I was waiting for. To hear that conviction from that concern I had. And he said it so much that it went right into my heart. And I knew there was no other question at that point. And so I did. I did. And I feel that, you know, he had that ability to understand devotees and to help them in such a way that he can make a very, very big difference in their lives. Many times I would come to Gita Nagari and we would sit together and talk together and take prasadam together. And even he revealed to me a lot of times some of the things that he was struggling with in his, you know, service to Srila Prabhupada. He told me one time he had a dream. And he was with Srila Prabhupada in the dream. And they were in a room together. And outside of the room, by the door, was a large, large assembly of people. And they were all members of the black race. And so he was sitting with Prabhupada, just happily being there. And Prabhupada said, looked at him and said, "Let them in. Let them in. Let them in." Indicated to Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj that please, you are a very instrumental part of bringing that race of people to my lotus feet, so please let them in. And that was a dream he had many, many, many years ago. Many years, at least 20 years ago. So he shared that with me. And I understood just how dear he was to Srila Prabhupada in bringing, you know, not only, of course, people from that race, but from all races. But specifically, he had that Shakti. He would... What I remember most about him is his intensity of his devotion. And it's explained that a devotee who is serious in Krishna consciousness, they're absorbed in their devotional service. He was absorbed 24 hours a day. He was intense in his devotional service. And he told me, he said, "I want to give every moment to Prabhupada." He told me that. He told me that many times, and he showed me that by his example, that I want to give every moment to Srila Prabhupada. I don't want to waste any time. He says, it would be better for me to just, you know, to just give up this body than to waste time. He was so determined to use every bit of time and energy and whatever else that Srila Prabhupada and Krishna had given to him in his devotional service. He was intense in his devotional service. He inspired so many people. I remember when I was in London one time, I just had finished a lecture in Soho Street and I was driving to Bhaktivedanta Manor where I had been staying. And the driver within the car, we were talking. And he said, "You know, this book, Spiritual Warrior 2, Transforming Lust into Love," he said, "there was one devotee, he was coming to the temple for some time. and he was really, really trying hard to become a devotee, but somehow or other he couldn't fit into the temple environment. He had a difficult time. So he actually lost faith, went away, and then he came across this book, Spiritual Warrior II, Changing Lust into Love. He said when he read that book, he was convinced. He came back to the temple and started chanting 16 rounds again. And this is one of many examples of how he inspired people in Krishna consciousness. He spoke the language. He spoke the language of the heart. He spoke the language of people in general where they could understand Srila Prabhupada's principles in a very, very easy and understandable way. And he said one time, he said, you know, I had to read so many books, and he pointed to the bookcase, this was just recently, on various subjects in order to present what I have presented in the particular language that I am presenting it in, to reach people from all walks of life. He did it as an austerity. He read so many books on various subjects in order to help people understand in a very simplified way the teachings of Srila Prabhupada for various types of people from all walks of life. And as a preacher, not only within ISKCON, but a preacher outside of ISKCON, he was probably the most powerful and the most influential. He went to Moscow. I think the first time he went to Moscow, and they put him on television. 3,000, I think it was 3,000. What was it? I forgot the exact number, but I don't remember how many people were watching that TV show. But he was on Moscow TV. He was on TV all around the world, in Africa, in America, in so many places. He entered the lives into people in various types of occupations, various types. People who were military people. When he was in Washington, D.C., he was preaching. He was giving a class at one university. I think it was Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. And people who were coming to this class were people who were members of the Pentagon, generals and other people who were of the Pentagon staff. And he was teaching principles of leadership, qualities of a leader, helping people to understand very simple, basic principles which would allow them to make the next step to devotional life. He could make bridges between various types of people in various areas of the... Well, he was expert at that. He spoke their language. And everybody loved him. Why did everybody love him? Because he loved everybody. That's the most... One of the things about Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he just loved everybody. He loved everybody. And everybody felt that here was someone who was important, who was my friend, who was influential, who could help me, who I could relate to, who I could talk. He could talk to anybody. He could talk to anybody. He could speak their language. Because he spoke the language, as we say, the language of love. He saw the person not, from the external view, but from the person as a spirit soul. And he used his intelligence, his abilities, and whatever else Krishna gave him to take that individual and help them to come to the next step in their spiritual life. He was expert in like that. He would talk to me so many times about, as Chandrasekhar Maharaj explained, how there was so much suffering in ISKCON, how devotees were feeling depressed, how devotees were committing suicide. Remember a few years ago, there was a series of suicides in various places, how people within the movement were being exploited, cheated, and discriminated against based on gender, based on race, based on inabilities or material inabilities. And he was concerned with that, not in a genuine way, more so than I think than us leaders in general. He focused on that, trying to do whatever he can to relieve that suffering. And he made that prayer at the end, that prayer that was similar to Vasudev Datta Thakur. Let me take on the sufferings of those within our movement that are suffering. Let me take on, so they will get a chance to come up in their Krishna consciousness. He was serious about that. That wasn't just some expression of trying to make a difference. He wanted to do it as an offering to Krishna, as an offering to these persons who in one sense needed that type of help in order to come to the next stage in their spiritual life. And he told me that many times. He told me, you know, how I could see he was always trying, he was always concerned how to solve the different difficulties, problems, struggles that the devotees had within the Krishna conscious movement. From another side, he was very dynamic, very innovative, very enthusiastic. There's one thing I want to share with you from another angle, is that our movement will never be the same in terms of the dancing. He has innovated a dance style that now will be part of, I think, ISKCON. And I think you know what I mean. And when I was in India this year, at Radhanath Maharaj's place in Radha Gopinath Temple in Chaupati, practically every day during the Guru Puja Kirtan, the brahmacharis would do that dance. And I was thinking, if it's happening here, it'll happen everywhere. It was amazing. Of course, you know that dance. He would just go from side to side and clap, and then go back to the other side and clap, and with a big smile and jumping up and down. And each, it was, and the devotees were doing that with such enthusiasm. And they were all having a wonderful time doing it. And I was thinking, yeah, this will actually be part of ISKCON's, when we say, dancing progress in our. Let me see. In our expression of Lord Chaitanya's kirtans. So I think our dancing will never be the same anymore. There's so much more I could say. Ekavira said I had about 15 minutes, so I don't know if I'm going beyond my 15 minutes. He told me about some of his struggles in Africa. I told this the other night, how it was so difficult to preach in Africa. He told me one story when he was preaching to one of the highest chiefs in one country. I can't remember whether it was Nigeria or one of the other major countries in Africa. And he was making very influential entries into the inner circle of that chieftain's, you know, palace. He was becoming very close to the chief, very close. But he said to me, some of the ministers were around the chief were becoming envious, and they were afraid of his influence towards the chief, because, you know, they had their vested interest. And so he told me, right after that, he was in a car, and he was driving along, and he was sitting in the back seat, and the driver that was driving the car he was in, all of a sudden, with no reason, just swerved in the immediate direction of the oncoming traffic. And they had a head-on collision. And, of course, Bhaktivedanta Maharaj said, I just took shelter of Krishna when I saw it coming. And he got a few scratches, but he was okay. The driver was hospitalized. But later on he explained to me, he said, he felt that those chieftains, and a lot of them they practice voodoo, and a lot of them are very good at it, had put some spell on this driver in such a way that he acted in that way and swerved right into the head-on traffic. He said the Krishna factor was there, though. He said that they didn't consider that. That's what saved me. That's the power, most powerful of all voodoo, is the Krishna factor. And so many beautiful stories we shared together. Of course, this is a common story that he told everyone. When he first began, or even before he first began in Krishna consciousness, he had been practicing his devotional life with so many other yogis and other persons in America who he had been working under. And he told this one story one time that he was doing some yoga under this one master. And then one day he came to this one master, and the master told him, he said to him, "You know, I can't take you any higher. This is the highest I can take you. If you want to know more about spiritual life, go to Bhaktivedanta. Go to ISKCON. Because they actually are teaching the highest." And so he was, you know, he had not actually heard of the devotees at that time. And then right after that, he met the devotees. And then he was curious because his teacher had somewhat of an influence on him, and then gradually came into the association of devotees. His preaching, his personality, his love, his concern, his availability, although he was so much absorbed in his service, he always had time for devotees. And that was his, actually you can say that was his main service. He was always concerned to somehow or other help the devotees in their Krishna consciousness. He would always want to help the devotees. He was influential with presidents, with chieftains, with people from all walks of life. And he could talk to anyone. He could relate to little children. He could relate to women. He could relate to everybody in a very Krishna conscious way, and that was his devotional. That was his devotion. That was his shakti. He had that intense desire to make a difference, to bring people to Krishna consciousness. He told me one time, this was recently, about a year ago. He says, "You know, I'm a sannyasi. You know, I really would like to, you know, I really enjoy associating with the, you know, the sannyas order. But you see me so many times, I'm working with householders, with children, so many like that." He says, "I do that because that's my service. They need help. But I long to be with my god brothers. I long to be with the, you know, the devotees in the sannyas ashram. So I can also, you know, share that mood of devotional service." He told me that personally. So there's so many wonderful, wonderful stories. I mean, there's more stories I can tell, but I don't want to take up too much time because there's so many exalted God brothers here, and I'm sure they have a lot to share. So thank you very much. Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj Ki.
Om Ganat Vidandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So we offer our respectful obeisances unto our spiritual masters, Divine Grace, Sesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So kindly open our eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while we are blind in the darkness of ignorance. We also offer our obeisances unto our exalted Godbrother, His Holiness Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, who has inspired us in so many ways throughout the progress or our attempts to be a devotee of Krishna. So, I'd like to tell some stories that some of you perhaps have not heard, because I had the good fortune to have the association of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj from the very beginning of his Krishna consciousness. And before I start with the stories, I wanted to just relate something I was mentioning to His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj and Bhakti Chura Maharaj yesterday. We were talking about ISKCON in general, how ISKCON is the most wonderful spiritual organization. And I said the reason I'm giving for this is not because ISKCON has so many buildings or whatever, but because ISKCON has so many amazing personalities. Of course, at the top of the list, there's His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. But then, I said, is there anyone in this world like Srila Bhaktivedanta Maharaj? Does any organization have someone like him? And then the answer was no. There's absolutely... I mean, none of us have read about, or whatever, anybody like that. An amazing, amazing, compassionate, dynamic, sacrificing personality. So I said, just on that basis, because Bhaktivedanta Maharaj is a member of this movement, I know this movement is the place to be. So I don't have to look anywhere else, just because I know Bhaktivedanta Maharaj is there. And we have so many other exalted Vaishnavas too. Of course, my God brothers here and God sisters and all you wonderful Vaishnavas. And also I can understand the glorious, exalted nature of Bhaktivedanta Maharaj just by seeing his disciples. Because, as they say, you shall know a tree by its fruits. So I look around here, and of course I've had the wonderful association with many of his disciples throughout the years, and it just... there's a sweetness there. You know the word rasa? Rasa, of course, many people think rasa means relationship. It means taste. You get a taste. Just like you have a certain type of fruit, you get a certain taste. So, if you associate with Srila Bhaktivedanta Maharaj's disciples, you get a certain wonderful taste, and that taste is his mood of love, his mood of service, his mood of surrender, his mood of devotion. I mean, I could go on with all the qualities. I mean, there's unlimited qualities that he possesses and his disciples are manifesting. And I'm sure that they will continue to manifest. And in this way, they can serve him in the best possible fashion. Because one of the last encounters I had, and then I'll go back to the beginning after this, but one of the last encounters I had with Srila Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was I asked him, how can I serve you? Now, normally I don't do that because I don't like to serve. I mean, I have to be frank. I love to be served. So I was crossing my fingers when I asked him that question. And he said, Maharaj, you know what? I'd like you to, you know, be GVC in Croatia. And I said, I almost ran out of the room at that time. And then I said, well, let me think about it. So after a few more days, you know, I was just like all day and night, I was thinking about, he asked me to do this. And then I contacted him. I said, all right, I'll do it. And he said, thank you very much for going along with the request of a dying man. And I said, uh-oh, I have to do it now. So the reason I'm telling that story is that we can best remember him in the long term by rendering service to him. Because I was thinking, this is the service, my connection with him. And, you know, I was also thinking in regard to some of my other God brothers who have passed away recently, like Tamalkrishna Maharaj and Sridhar Maharaj, how that I'm serving Tamalkrishna Maharaj in Fiji, and that I'm serving Sridhar Maharaj by being on the executive committee of the Mayapur campaign for building the temple. So I was thinking, in this way we're never actually separated. It's very important to realize that connection is actually service. And if the Vaishnavas are serving each other, we can't just think of serving just our spiritual master. We're serving each other, because this is a lesson that he taught me, and he taught many other people, and taught you all, of course, that if we're serving each other, then we're always together. And then if we're always together, there's never any separation. So this was the mood that, during my final encounter with Srila Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, we had. Because we were talking, I'll reveal the contents of our discussion. We were talking about how we're a team. That is, the Prabhupada followers, Prabhupada Anugas, and especially, you know, myself, Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, and the older devotees here, how we're a team and we're always serving Prabhupada. I mean, they're a team. I don't know if I'm always serving Prabhupada, but I don't want to be puffed up. But we're serving Prabhupada, and this team is going from one place to another. This is a realization I had when Srila Tummala Krishna Maharaj left this world, that this team is actually going from one place to another with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada is calling the devotees to join him. Like when Tummala Krishna Maharaj left, I realized that he left not because of a car accident. It had nothing to do with it. That was just external. He left because Prabhupada wanted him to join. And in the same way, when Srila Bhaktivedanta Maharaj left, of course, he had that dream where Tummala Krishna Maharaj appeared to him. And he said to him that Prabhupada wants you. Prabhupada wants you to continue with a preaching mission somewhere else. And Radhanath Maharaj relayed to me the story. There's a second part of that dream where Tummala Krishna Maharaj was crying. And Srila Bhaktivedanta Maharaj asked him, "Why are you crying?" And you can correct me if I get this wrong, because this is secondhand. And he said, "Because I'm crying because of all the disciples that will be bereft." Just like all Tummala Krishna Maharaj was saying, all my disciples that were bereft when I had to leave this world to join Prabhupada's mission. "I'm crying because I'm feeling unhappy because of all your disciples that will be bereft of your association when you leave this world." So this very much cemented in my mind when I heard the story yesterday from Srila Radhanath Maharaj, that this is a transcendental team. And then traveling from one place to another, just like the Radha Damodar Party. You all remember the Radha Damodar Party? So you may not remember it, you know of it. How Tummala Krishna Maharaj would travel on the Radha Damodar Party, and they would steal people from the different temples. The temple president would wake up the next morning and find all of his brahmacharis gone. So Prabhupada has his traveling Radha Damodar Party. Like you have Radha Damodar here. And he's just taking his assistants, you know, with him. So it's not that Srila Bhaktivedanta Maharaj left because of cancer. He left because Prabhupada was taking him to serve somewhere else. And his traveling Radha Damodar Party. So I'm also praying that I can be part of that traveling Radha Damodar Party. So with my final meeting with Srila Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, it was interesting how we said goodbye to each other. I mean, normally you'd be crying because I knew this might be the last encounter or meeting I would have with him. But instead, what we both said to each other was, "See you later." That's interesting, isn't it? It's just like two friends are being separated. "Oh, I'll see you later, friend." So we were. It was like that. I mean, of course, there was a certain sadness to it, but we understood that we will be together. We are together. And if we serve this mission of Srila Prabhupada and we do service for each other, then there's no separation. So much for the philosophy. So I'm going to tell some stories. I hope I don't go over time because Ekavira told me to limit myself. I was fortunate enough to be with Srila Bhaktivedanta Maharaj from the very beginning. He joined our traveling party. We were traveling with a sannyasi. We're not going to mention his name. But in those days, the sannyasis were, I would say, much heavier than they are nowadays, to say the least. And both of us, because he was previously the president of the student body in Princeton, and a very exalted scholar and, you know, super intelligent. So, therefore, the sannyasis generally thought it was their mission to chastise so that we could bring us down to earth. Because I also came from a university background. So the sannyasi was chastising us continually, and Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, being very, very soft-hearted, was often in tears because of this. And I was also in tears. So we spent a good part of our brahmachari years in tears, and I remember it was so wonderful having this association. We put our arms around each other and just reassure each other about how this is all purifying. Because that's what the sannyasis would usually say after they chastise you, that you deserve this because you're in the material world. You need to get purified. So we were taking this philosophy seriously and would console each other. And so in this way, we bonded very nicely. And after some time, traveling with sannyasis was a little too heavy for me. So I left, and he continued. And he joined the library party. And the Lord Party was formed by Sesrup Maharaj and Fridananda Maharaj. And in that library party, he executed such great austerities, and some of you may know these stories, that he was going to Eastern Europe where it was dangerous to be a Hare Krishna. It was dangerous to have Prabhupada's books. If you entered into any of these countries, they would search your luggage, and if they found Prabhupada's books, if they found neck beads, any sign of a devotee, you wouldn't be allowed in the country. And if you preach while you're in the country, you could possibly go to, you know, Siberia or somewhere like that. But he was given the task of preaching in the Eastern European countries. And in order to accomplish that, to evade the detection of the KGB and other secret services, he was telling me the story, he had to live on a train. He practically never saw a bedroom or anything like that. And he would jump from one train to another as the KGB was trying to detect him. He would go to the university, distribute books to the professors, then get on the next train and get out of town before they caught him. And Prabhupada was so pleased with this that Prabhupada, you know, embraced him and said, "You have achieved the perfection." I mean, Prabhupada normally didn't embrace devotees that much. It's not like nowadays, of course, we all embrace each other. It's a very common thing. But Prabhupada wasn't as physical as that in general. But Prabhupada did that with Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. They're very unusual. And as far as his austerity and determination, one personal experience I have was that one time I went to stay with him in IFAS building in Washington, D.C., which is right near the Union Station in downtown Washington, D.C., and I was looking forward to that. So we spent some time together. It was very, very enlivening to me. And then I was staying in the same room, so, you know, I wanted to take rest. And he was explaining to me that he usually didn't take rest till 11 or 12 at night. So I was thinking, what am I going to do? And then usually he got up at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And personally, I'm very addicted to sleeping. So finally I ended up sleeping in his closet. You know, I closed the door, even though there was no air, because he was up all night long, practically speaking, serving Srila Prabhupada, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, and bringing devotees in, preaching to them, tireless. It was just amazing, amazing. And the service attitude he had, here's a story about the service attitude, is that in the early days when we went to Mayapur, we were all taking prasadam in this big pavilion that is just now used for the outsiders to take prasadam, or during festivals. So while we were taking prasadam, we were older devotees at that time. You know, I was sitting down taking prasadam, but Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj would always be serving the prasadam. And he would not take prasadam until everyone had eaten, even though he was an older devotee. I would motion to him as he was serving prasadam, sit down, you know, take prasadam with that, because I was embarrassed, you know, that I wasn't serving and he was. So I said, sit down. And he said, no, I'm going to serve. And he humbly served every single Vaishnava there during the Mayapur festivals. I mean, this was so impressive. As far as his soft-heartedness is concerned, one story I'll tell about that is that several years ago, we had the Gurukulis reveal some of the experiences that they had within, unfortunate experiences within the Gurukul system. It was in Alachua, Florida. And as they were talking about these unfortunate experiences, he manifested so much emotion that normally he had no problem, you know, speaking, giving the lecture, but he was practically an ocean of tears. I had never seen someone so emotionally touched as he when he was hearing about the travails of these students. Such a deep, deep emotional depth of character, emotional feeling. I was amazed, and just to see his love for these Gurukulis and his love for every living entity and all the devotees. And so, actually, that's probably all I have time for today. But the main point I wanted to leave with you was one of the first things I said is about doing service. Now, I mentioned the service he gave me, and I think that everyone here should search in their own hearts what service he has given you and what service he wants you to do, and also be aware
that he is observing you. We mentioned recently at one initiation, we said that you should understand that the spiritual master, you should function in such a way that you're thinking the spiritual master has a web camera on you. That may make you a little nervous. But you should function in such a way that he is, as if he's observing you, and indeed he is. The spiritual master is observing you. So you all have a great responsibility now to figure out what service you can do for him, to dedicate your life. Of course, one of the most important services, one of the most important examples he set was the example of good sadhana. He was chanting his 16 rounds up to the very end. I mean, I mentioned this to everybody, at least the last few weeks I've been mentioning. I said, everybody, or not everybody, but many people have excuses why they can't chant, why they have to leave rounds over, isn't it? They say that I was too tired, someone yelled at me, I was depressed. I mean, you have a million and one excuses. I know that, and I've heard them all. But Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, in spite of being in the situation he was in, was determined to chant those 16 rounds every day. I mean, isn't that inspiring? I mean, that's a lesson. That's an acharya. He teaches by that example. So that's the first way we can serve him, by being determined to fulfill our vows. He was dhridavrata. That means firm determination. One-pointed, very one-pointed. Given an order by Prabhupada, he was one-pointed. He was like Arjuna, you know, that Eye of the Bird example, where Arjuna was told, all the students of Dronacharya were told to, you know, look at the bird and take aim at the eye, and everyone else was seeing other things. But Arjuna was just seeing the eye. Nothing else. Not even the teacher. In the same way, Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj is like that with his vows, with his determination, with his devotion to Srila Prabhupada. So that's the first way we can serve. And then a practical way, serving other Vaishnavas, dedicate our lives to serving each other, serving other Vaishnavas, preaching, expanding, giving love to others. And in this way, we will never be bereft of his association. So thank you very much. All glory to Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj.
I thank His Holiness Bir Krishna Swami for coming to Gita Nagari. Bir Krishna Maharaj is probably one of the busiest devotees based in North America, and he took his time out to come here and change his schedule, and we're most grateful that he could do that. Yeah. And then on that same note, His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj, he came here from England just to be here with us, to give us his affection, and we are most appreciative for him coming. And I know I've thanked you, and I can't thank all of you enough, and I'll thank you again, and you might get tired of me thanking you, and I'll probably thank you again after that time, so please don't get upset with me. So we'd like His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj to share some memories of His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami.
Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Tirtha Swami Niti Namine. Srimad Bhagavatam describes that Rukmini Devi fell in love with Krishna just by hearing about him. To some extent, in a similar way, I
fell in love with Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj just by hearing about him. In 1977, Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. He was actually preparing to leave this planet. And at that time, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was in East Europe preaching behind iron curtains. Srila Prabhupada's physical condition was very delicate, very frail. He barely used to eat anything. And after lunch time, I wouldn't say after lunch, but lunch ritual rather, Prabhupada used to just come, sit to in front of his plate, but he couldn't eat anything. So after that, Tamal Krishna Maharaj used to come to read the devotees' letters that came from different parts of the world. Tamal Krishna Maharaj used to read, Prabhupada used to listen, and at that time I noticed that whenever a letter came from Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, Prabhupada became very, very excited. And also, I could see that Prabhupada was very concerned about his welfare, because preaching in East European countries at that time, in those communist countries at that time, was extremely dangerous. One could have been even executed for that. One could have been sentenced to death or life imprisonment, because he would have been treated as a spy. An American in East European country, in the Russian countries those days, was extremely dangerous. And Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj also used to write quite frequently. Later on he told me that he used to actually write every day. Every day when he would come back from distribution, and he would just write a letter to Srila Prabhupada. And at that time, just seeing how much love Srila Prabhupada had for him, and how much love Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj had for Srila Prabhupada, was extremely impressive. I was just a new devotee. I didn't really know much about the movement, the preaching mission, the book distribution campaign. I knew about them, but I couldn't properly fathom the importance of these activities. And that's how I actually got to know about Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. And I, as I mentioned, I fell in love with him. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj impressed or pleased Srila Prabhupada so much that at that time, Prabhupada mentioned one day after hearing one of his letters. And of course, I don't want to repeat that, because you all are probably more aware of those letters, those preaching exploits of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj in those countries than I am. Because he was, every letter would be full of exciting news. And what he would try to emphasize, that how Krishna was actually creating the facilities for his preaching. Like, in most inconceivable way, he would escape certain situation. In a most unusual way, he would come across some individual who would be a perfect target for accepting the standing order of Prabhupada's books in the universities. And one could see that it was actually Krishna's divine arrangement, and he was simply playing and as a puppet in Krishna's hands for Srila Prabhupada's mission. And it is around that time Prabhupada actually mentioned that the news of book distribution gives me life. And he used to be most touched, most excited, most moved when he would read the letters or hear the letters from Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj sent from those countries. Then I had the good fortune of meeting Maharaj in 1979. In 78, I, for some reason, maybe he didn't go to Mayapur. In 79, I met him for the first time in Calcutta Temple. Maharaj just came, and that was the first time he came to attend the Gaur Purnima festival. And we immediately embraced each other, and I told him, I heard so much about you. And he told me, I also heard so much about you. And that was the beginning of our relationship. And I will honestly admit that those days I used to think that I had a very special relationship with Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. I was so fortunate. But later on, I realized that everyone has a very special relationship with Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. Because he had so much love. He not only spoke about love, he actually gave it out. He gave it out to everybody. Sometimes he didn't have to say anything. One could just see from his care and concern. And as Dear Krishna Maharaj was mentioning, but just by hearing those narrations of our ex-Gurukuli children's suffering in our institution made Maharaj shed tears incessantly. And that is how he was. Sometimes, of course, he had stern exterior, and sometimes he was misunderstood because of that stern exterior of his. But underneath that stern exterior, he had the heart soft, maybe even softer than a rose petal. And at the same time, I have seen his concern, his loyalty, his for the devotees he cared for, devotees he worked with. I will relate one incident. It's generally I don't speak about this, but today I'm thinking it's just a family affair. Like there's nothing to hide. And in 1987, ISKCON was actually 1986, ISKCON went through a major crisis. And in 1987, during the Gaur Purnima festival, it was felt that something must be done about that in order to save ISKCON. The mistakes that were made must be rectified, and the 50-man committee was formed, though from different parts of the world. Senior devotees from different parts of the world came to Mayapur, and to just consider where we actually went wrong. We were trying to assess it at that time, and at that time Kirtananda Maharaj took a very strong stand against that move, and it was felt that if Kirtananda Maharaj takes that stand, then it has to be dealt with equal sternness, with equal resolute determination. And at that time it was actually decided that the GBC body has to expel Kirtananda Maharaj. And the discussions were going on, and how to do that, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj played a very important role in that, because probably he was the only one, actually Ravindra Sarva Prabhu, who was the person who kind of masterminded that 50-man committee thing, and he felt that the only person who could actually deal with Kirtananda Maharaj was Tamal Krishna Maharaj, because both of them were probably the equal match. And so Tamal Krishna Maharaj, with a small team, was speaking to different GBC members, and it's kind of preparing the groundwork. And at that time, Bhaktitirtha Maharaj came, and he somehow got the news of that, and he was not properly informed, I feel. He was not properly given the clear picture of what was going to happen. Probably someone just painted it as a kind of a political maneuvering going on and so forth. And Bhaktitirtha Maharaj was so loyal to Kirtananda Maharaj that he felt that it was unfair. And at that time, unfortunately, Kirtananda Maharaj also was refused the visa to come to India, so he couldn't come. And all this was happening in his absence. And Bhaktitirtha Maharaj, in protest, just left Mayapur. He just left Mayapur because it was his protest against this unfair maneuvering. And when we got the news that Bhaktitirtha Maharaj left, we were actually in a meeting, in a discussion, and immediately we came out. Oh no, we got to know that Bhaktitirtha Maharaj was very upset about this, and so we immediately came to meet with Bhaktitirtha Maharaj, but then only we got to know that Bhaktitirtha Maharaj left. And that gave me a very, very profound perception of his noble character, that he would be upright and straight as a bolt, and he would not do anything in a apparently unfair way. Like, and that unfortunately separated us for some time. And then in 1989, I was the chairman of the GBC, and I tried to make arrangements to meet with Maharaj and try to bring him to Mayapur. And once we got his, I got the phone number, I contacted Maharaj, and we were supposed to meet. Maharaj was supposed to fly from Washington. And I was in Philadelphia with Ravind Swarup Prabhu, and both of us actually drove to meet Maharaj in the airport. That's the only time where we could meet. And then we got stuck in a traffic jam, and when we arrived in the airport, he had to catch the flight. But anyway, Prabhupada's family is a very special family. Sometimes we may have some misunderstanding, but eventually all the children of Srila Prabhupada came back, or will come back, to the shelter of their father, shelter of their glorious father. And ever since Bhaktivedanta Maharaj came back, we saw amazing things. Actually, during the absence, we saw how Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was actually preaching on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. He actually never separated from Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet or Prabhupada's mission. He carried on. It was just some internal misunderstanding. And I venture to speak about it today. As I told, like, generally I don't speak about it because it's not really pleasant or it's not really fair. But in order to glorify Maharaj, you know, I felt that I needed to speak that today. And then since then again, we were united, or we had the opportunity to spend time together. And I think the few years separation made our heart grow fonder for each other. And whenever Maharaj came to Mayapur, I had the good fortune to host him in my room, and I used to have his, or rather I used to try to have his association abundantly. As Bira Krishna Maharaj was telling, like, he was always so busy that sometimes it's difficult to get his association. Because he's always so caring, and especially in Mayapur at that time, so many devotees wanted him, wanted his association. And Maharaj was also so giving. He never cared for his concern, whether he was tired, whether he had time for eating or sleeping. He didn't care. Whenever somebody came, Maharaj was there to give him his time, his guidance, his advice, his counsel. So, recently, when we got the news that Maharaj developed this ailment, it was extremely painful to get the news, and all of us were praying that he will be cured. But anyway, Krishna has his plan. Krishna sent him to bless this world, and at some point Krishna took him back. And Krishna's plans are inconceivable, and we Thank you. I was feeling very sad because both of us knew that this is the last time that we are going to meet. We are going to see each other. And Maharaj told me, "Don't worry, I will communicate with you. We'll be together." And at that time I thought that it was just a kind of a consolation that he was giving me. But then one day we were discussing on the phone, and he was, we had a long discussion, and at one point he just told me the same thing, "Don't worry, I will be in touch with you. I will be with you. Even after I leave this body, I will be in touch with you." And that time I realized the profundity of this statement. And I very strongly believe that yes, he will continue to communicate with me. And now it is up to me that I can become open to receive his messages, receive his instructions. And I pray to Krishna that I can become purified enough to hear him speak to me, continue to speak to me, continue to guide me, continue to give me his association. Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj ki.
Thank you very much, Maharaj, especially for sharing that pastime, just displaying how honorable His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj is. We'd like to ask Mother Saudamini if you would speak, please.
Panchakalpa Dhruvascha, Kipasindhavya Vascha, Dhinamana Vaishnavaya Namo Namaha. I'm Saudamini, Rabindranath Prabhu's wife. That's why I'm here, I guess, being asked to speak on his behalf because he's not here. I guess I'll finish Bhakti Chuswami's story a little bit more because there was a little bit more to that when Bhakti Chuswami was saying how he was in Philadelphia and he and my husband went to the airport. They were trying to contact Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, and so my husband was given the task to follow through and try to contact him. So I don't remember the timing exactly, but he and I then made an appointment and we went down to visit Maharaj when he was in D.C. and we visited him at the Institute with the express instructions from Bhakti Chuswami to get Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj to please start attending the GBC meetings again because he was so needed in that body that was given the task by Srila Prabhupada to continue leading our society, our ISKCON, Prabhupada's ISKCON. And I think Veer Krishna Maharaj, you were there. We all had lunch together. My husband and I, some traffic problems, we arrived a little late, and we were ushered right in to see Maharaj. His deities were there, wonderful, wonderful devotees there at the Institute. I remember Rajalila. I'm not sure, I think maybe Mitravinda was there. There were so many devotees I recognize. Everyone knows who knows me knows I never remember names, but I definitely remember faces. You know, so there were so many wonderful devotees there, and we had a very nice lunch. And one of the qualities my husband most admired about Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was his always giving the benefit of the doubt. He himself, Maharaj, was an honest man, and he accepted that in dealing with his godbrothers, that they also were sincere and that they were honest. So even if there was some disagreement, that it was a fair disagreement. It was that sometimes to work together, we need to be able to disagree and able to trust one another, that there was nothing, no ulterior motive, that we were all honestly and sincerely trying to serve Srila Prabhupada. So that if there was seeming some disagreement, at least we could agree that we were doing it for the right purposes. And Prabhupada's wisdom, he left this movement to a group of people because we need that consensus. And after that meeting in D.C., which was really wonderful, that next GBC meeting, Maharaj did return and start to play a very important and crucial role in helping to get Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON properly on track. And so I just wanted to finish that, Maharaj, because we were happy to be, and I was very happy to be able to go along. We first met Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj as part of the library party in the mid-70s in Philadelphia, in Ganesham. And right from the beginning, my husband told me, he said, this young man, I mean young man, he was 5 years younger than us, and but because he was, he seemed so much younger, you know, so he said, he's going to be a great devotee, because right from the beginning, he when he came there in the library party, he was so austere, he was so, he didn't waste any time. He was always working very hard, doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. And that didn't come from sort of that, you know, new devotee, you know, reaching for the highest when it was really not, didn't have a proper basis. Actually, my husband spoke Ganesham in that time, you know, while he was in our temple for some time doing as the library party. And because they had similar background in the sense that they had both gone to Ivy League schools and you know, some that era. Maharaj expressed to my husband how he felt so indebted to Srila Prabhupada for saving him from all that, you know, his... I don't mean to, you know, negate like the value within devotional service of an academic career or something like that. Far from it. Prabhupada was very proud. He actually wanted, you know, he wanted to say, "Oh, this is my disciple, so and so. He has a PhD in this or whatever," you know. But Bhakti Tirtha, he really had that sense of eternal gratitude to Srila Prabhupada, and he expressed it by taking very seriously his duties and responsibilities. As I said, this was like somewhere mid-70s, 74, 75, 76, something like that, when he came through and was there on the library party. And while my mind is there focused in Philadelphia during those days, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj had just gotten Brahmin initiation, so someone who knows his history carefully will know more or less the dates. And because he was traveling, he hadn't yet gotten a chance to offer arti or do any deity worship. So he came to me. I was the pujari, and he had me teach him, and he did a breakfast offering in arti as his first, you know, deity worship as a newly initiated Brahmin. And those same Lord Jagannath deities are coming here to coming here to Giranagari on the 30th of July for the Rath Yatra. So please all come back, because that was Maharaj's. He offered arti to them first, so they were very special in his lila. And Giranagari is very special to him, and he'd be... don't think, oh, now Maharaj won't be here, so I won't come to the Rath Yatra or whatever. It's important to carry on like that, you know. So, on behalf of Giranagari, please invite you to come back on July 30th. I will say this, that when I taught Maharaj that RT, my dealings with him, that was sort of right, the mid-70s was sort of the beginning, from my point of view, in ISKCON, of this sort of little bit of what eventually Prabhupada referred to as the fratricidal war, until maybe the late 73, early 74, or whatever. Never felt huge divisions in terms of sannyasi, brahmachari, grihastha, women, children, whatever. All felt very valued by Srila Prabhupada. But due to our immaturity, whatever, I always equate that to the adolescent years of ISKCON. They're developed, you know, this sense and male, female, whatever. And Bhaktitirtha Ghanisham then was, as I said, a brahmachari, a new Brahmin. And he came and he had me teach him how to do the RT. And even from that earliest days, in a very tense time in our movement, he had the ability to be a perfect gentleman. He never crossed that line of impropriety in dealing with women, nor did he stay on the side of it to extent that he was rude or disrespectful. And I always appreciate that very much about him. And I am hoping that we can all, keep that value in our society, because not just women, but he did value people not based on their body. When we were when Maharaj left his body, and then the memorial ceremony was scheduled, because my husband's in Denmark, I asked our oldest son Yudhishthir here. I said, maybe they'll want, you know, your father to speak, so it would be natural that, as the oldest son, that you speak on his behalf, you know. And that kind of put Yudhishthir in a spot in one sense, you know. But I said, what you can just do is maybe you can read the last letter that my husband wrote to Maharaj, and then the letter that he wrote back, you know. I hadn't seen it. But finally I managed to, or by help of one of his disciples, you know, capture it from the internet, whatever. And the letter was totally inappropriate to read at this occasion, because typically of Maharaj, the whole letter to my husband was praising my husband, you know, giving him, so it was all about Ravindra Sarup. It wasn't, it was, as you can imagine, it was not appropriate to be read here, especially on behalf of Ravindra Sarup Prabhu. So, obviously we didn't read it. But I also think that it was very typical of Maharaj. He always put the praise and the glories to the other devotees and didn't take any for himself. And I will say that at the end of the letter, he said something. I'm not saying this out of sentiment or whatever. He says, a man who is dying does not need to be, you know, say something in a dishonest way. A man who's facing death. I paraphrase. I don't have it memorized because I only saw the letter yesterday for the first time. But actually, he was a person who was honest like that his whole life. He lived every day as if it was a man facing death, which is what we're all supposed to be doing. So, I can't say too much more on behalf of my husband. But while I have the microphone, I will say this, and this is on my own behalf. I appreciate it that Maharaj, so many occasions he would have me speak or come forward, and I wasn't just Ravindra Sarup Prabhu's wife. He also valued me and my own self as an individual. Just like so many people have said, or Bhakti Chiswami just said, everybody had a special relationship with Maharaj. So while I've got the microphone, and because he valued me as an individual, this is from me, not from my husband, I'll use this opportunity especially to speak to those of you who were Diksha disciples Bhaktitirtha Maharaj. I was thinking this week because Srila Prabhupada also left his body on a Monday. And the following Friday in Philadelphia, we moved from the temple, previous temple, to the one we're in now. And I remember that night, it was a Friday night, and we had to move the deities in time for the last RT. And there was an incredible thunderstorm. And in Philadelphia last night, we had the same thing. In fact, Savitri's modem literally blew up. I mean, it was lucky she was there. Otherwise, there could have been a fire. You know, the lightning and the storm and everything was coming down. And when Srila Prabhupada, that week of Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, it was similar, leaving his body on a Monday. That Friday, a huge storm. And it's sort of like, I'm not so good at remembering verses, but I know my husband always says it in somewhere in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It says that when the spiritual master leaves the planet, sometimes there is great chaos. And it's, to me, it's sort of representative by the storm and the lightning, and that's certainly fearful and chaotic like that. Moving in our situation, trying to move the deities with umbrellas and everything, get them into the new building. But it also goes on that it says by the sincere following of the disciples, then the order is restored. So those of you who have lost your spiritual master, at least, you know, in this present form, you're actually in a better position than we were. None of us had been devotees for more than 12 years. A lot of our mistakes were from our immaturity. It's sort of like if someone loses their parents and the oldest child is 12 years old, they can do the best they can, but there's bound to be some mistake. So don't hold it against us for our mistakes, please. They're all sincere people trying to serve Prabhupada. You have the value of aunts and uncles and godbrothers and godsisters, a society where there's many people who can help you. But at the same time, it's just like when someone loses the parents, no matter how old you are, that's sort of the beginning of your grown-up life. And in terms of your spiritual life, now you have to be the grown-ups. And you also have to be prepared to also become spiritual masters yourself, to give guidance and shelter to people, and to start to become not just to take seriously, to follow the process, to become qualified to do that in a way. And it's very important for our movement to go on. There are so many Prabhupada disciples. The movement will be spread exponentially. So that means that all of you have to represent Bhaktitirtha Maharaj in a proper way. And so you've got his blessings. You've got the blessings and any help or guidance from so many godbrothers and godsisters of your Guru Maharaj. But now it's time for you also to come to that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Could I ask all of the caretakers to please come up very quickly? His Holiness Radhanath Swami is the last person we would like to hear from before lunch, Prasad. And His Holiness Radhanath Swami has been here in Gita Nagari since the beginning of May. A few weeks ago, we were speaking to Maharaj and Radhanath Swami, and he was asking, every day he would ask, you know, how Bhaktitirtha Maharaj is actually doing. And this day I was sharing, and I expressed to Maharaj, I said, You know, we really don't know when he actually will depart. We have no idea whatsoever. He's still trying to assist as much as he can, and mostly with the caregivers, as we eventually realized. And Maharaj, he said, you know, I don't find that hard to believe. He said, because in the beginning of the May, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj told me that he would probably leave in about 3 days or so. And that was 6 or 7 weeks ago. So I don't find that very hard to believe. And as we expressed earlier, so many devotees that are here, they took time out of their busy schedules. Radhanath Swami, he had every day, practically every hour accounted for. But because of his loving affection for his god brother, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he actually changed all of those plans and made it a priority to actually be here, to not only assist His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami, but also every day he came and he'd check in with the caretakers and make sure we weren't choking each other in offering this service to His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami. So we wanted to share some appreciation for Maharaj at this point in time before he speaks. And there's one other caretaker. Oh, she's back here. And Mangalarti. And of all of these caretakers, His Holiness Radhanath Swami is the best. Yeah, the best. And as a matter of fact, we call him our chief caretaker. And so, in that light, we'd like to make a presentation to Maharaj. We'd like to crown him our chief caretaker. So we have one presentation from all of the disciples of His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami, and this is a small token of our appreciation. And as you open it, it's a very special gift from all of our hearts to yours. This is the divine flute of Radha Damodar. It's Damodar's flute. And we're giving it on behalf of the disciples of His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami.
Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Tirtha Swami Iti Namane Vansha Kalpatarupyascha Kripa Sindhupya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare In the wonderful lecture that Sripad Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj gave to us today, he discussed the school of love. In our Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya, one of the prominent courses in that school is love and separation. The anguish of the heart that naturally awakens upon the disappearance of the spiritual master is an experience that cannot be understood by material intelligence. The assembled disciples of Srila Prabhupada, all of us, we have also personally experienced within our hearts the disappearance of our spiritual master from this world. And thus we know what you are all going through at this time. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us union in separation. He reasons ill who say that Vaishnavas die, for thou art living still and sound. Vaishnavas die to live, and live to spread the holy name around. Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj Ki Jai. When the spiritual master departs from our physical presence, the intense pain which brings about tears of separation when they are shed in a life that is in harmony with the instructions and the will of the spiritual master, then the deeper the pain, the more ecstatic is our love. Those tears water the seed of love within our hearts. It is convenient to see Guru with our eyes, and touch him with our bodies. But in his manifestation of separation, we must find the deep essential union of his presence, very deep within our own hearts, through our surrender, our loyalty, and our devotion. Krishna lived in this world for 125 years. Only 12 years and 8 months did he live in Vrindavan. And yet the residents of Vrindavan are the most exalted, most glorious. Their love was love in separation. And Krishna in Dwarka told Satyabhama and others that if I go to Vrindavan, I will interfere with the intensity of the depths of their love for me in separation, which it cannot get any higher than what it is. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, during the last 12 years of his Leela, spent much of his time in Gambira, feeling the love of the gopis in separation from Krishna. And the six Goswamis, they captured that essence. Hey Radhe Brajadeva Kecha Lalite Hinanda Shunokuta. Always searching in separation from Krishna. Srila Prabhupada explains that there are the essence of perfection of the Gaudiya Sampradaya is union and separation, love and separation. Krishna is represented by Guru within this world. Please understand that Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj is alive within all of our hearts. On several occasions, during his last weeks, he told us that Prabhupada is calling me back. And when I go back to the spiritual world, and then he'd smile, he said, I will be there to prepare for the arrival of all of you. Maharaj lived an extraordinary life. His life gives hope to the hopeless. Not only by his words and his actions, but by how Krishna orchestrated him to live in this world. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was born and raised in a poverty-stricken inner-city ghetto. He was from a race that was persecuted. And in the 1950s, the persecution was hundreds of times more than what we see today. And as a child, he had a speech defect. He would stammer. He could not speak. Sometimes it would take a couple minutes to finish one word. He was ridiculed, laughed at, criticized. What hope is there for a successful life for a person born in that situation? He was brought up in a broken family without a father. Hardly food or any clothes to wear. He had to fight to survive. Told me when he was a young, anyone who wanted to live in his neighborhood had to carry a gun. What hope for a person in that predicament to do something extraordinary in life? Yet Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj, Princeton graduate, came to the Hare Krishna movement, and in his life, author of over 25 books, spiritual counselor of celebrities, heads of states, and who has followers from practically every race, every caste, white people, Chinese people, black people, young people, old people, rich people, poor people, from South America, Australia, Africa, Europe, Russia, India, even America. Who worship his feet, who accept every word he speaks as the word of God. If there's ever been a success story in this world, it is Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj. Since the time of Haridas Thakur, if there's anybody who has shown that wherever you're coming from, your life can be an extraordinary success if you just surrender to Krishna. Maharaj exemplified that. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj conquered Srila Prabhupada's heart by his sincerity. We have heard from His Holiness Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj about how deeply Prabhupada was affected by Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's service. Prabhupada embraced him, shed tears on Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's body. And when a voice of love and gratitude told Maharaj, "Thank you very much. Your life is perfect." Those are the words of Prabhupada. His life successful, perfect. Just a couple of weeks ago, Maharaj told me a story. I never heard it before. But to understand his mood of being a teacher in the school of love, I believe it has a very, very good lesson. During that time, when Maharaj was behind the Iron Curtain risking his life, undergoing severe austerities, he was one of the number one book distributors in all the world. And Prabhupada was showering so much gratitude and blessings and praise upon him. He told me in 1977 in Mayapur during the Gaur Purnima festival, that whole library party came. And he learned something that devastated his heart. He told me that all the devotees in the party of distributing books in that part of the world had a meeting together and were seriously considering resigning. Why? Because the pressure was so much intense working with Ghanshyam Prabhu. He told me that he would rise about 1 a.m, finish all of his rounds, read Prabhupada's books, prepare for his day. By the time, before the colleges were open, he was at the doors of the professors. And he would work and he would perform his service with such determination that the first meal of the day that he would have was after the last college locked its last door, which was usually about 10 o'clock at night. Because he felt, if I divert my attention to anything else for even a moment, it's that much less of Prabhupada's mercy that I can distribute. He considered every moment to be such a sacred opportunity to serve Prabhupada. And because he was a leader of the party, his example in his preaching, he expected everyone to be like him. And it was too much. When he heard that the devotees were so dissatisfied that they were actually thinking of resigning, his heart really broke. He explained to me, at that point, his whole perception of devotional service had changed. He said to me, it's not about the great things that we do. It's not about the recognition that we get from our spiritual master. It's not about simply the winning scores we achieve. It's about being the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. How am I really pleasing Prabhupada if I'm displeasing his devotees? If I'm discouraging them, and from that day on, he explained to me, he understood that along with doing everything we can to please our guru, we must make it priority in our life to show actual love, compassion, and encouragement to every single devotee. And he has lived by this principle. Even in the face of great criticism, he knew what it was like to be persecuted. Anyone who had the slightest inclination for Krishna, he was willing to stand on the line and risk threats of violence or criticism or whatever to give them encouragement, to make them feel loved and valued. And then Maharaj told me that this is my mission, and this is what I expect my followers to live by. His last public istogosti, he was describing his own pain that he was undergoing in his cancer. And then he explained what a blessing it was, because it helped him to understand other people who were in pain. Because devotional service is not simply a matter of doing with your body, but it's the purpose of how we're doing it with our heart. Compassion is our acts which are springing from our love. On the day of the Snan Yatra, which is also the disappearance day of Mukunda Dutt, I was sitting alone with Maharaj in his room, explaining to him some of my understandings of the importance of this auspicious day. And we talked about Snan Yatra, and he was so excited because he had such love for Lord Jagannath. And then I was telling some things about Mukunda Dutt, and he was listening. Mukunda Dutt was one of the most loved kirtan singers of all Lord Chaitanya's associates. And I concluded by saying that Mukunda Dutt was the younger brother of Vasudev Dutt. As soon as I said the name Vasudev Dutt, Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj, his lips quivered, his body shook, and tears started pouring and pouring out of his eyes. And then he took me by the head with his hand and pulled my head right to his heart and pressed my head against his heart with the palm of his hand, crying and with a trembling voice saying, thank you for reminding me of Vasudev Dutt. And as he was crying and crying and crying, all he could say was, Vasudev Dutt. Vasudev Dutt, what a great soul. Thank you for reminding me of Vasudev Dutt. We know that in last year's Vyas Puja to Srila Prabhupada, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj prayed to follow in the line of Vasudev Dutt, to be willing to suffer for the welfare of others. Vasudev Dutt prayed that all the sins of all living beings in the entire universe fall on his head, and that he may have the great fortune of suffering in hellish conditions perpetually, so that everyone else could go back to Krishna. It was that mood that Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj considered the most sacred purpose of his life. He worshipped that compassion. Srila Prabhupada lived by that principle. And how extraordinarily Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj revealed that to all of us. One day, just about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks, he was in immense pain, physically, immense pain. And he asked me, Maharaj, please speak to me about Krishna. That's the only real medicine. I was speaking. And then I just started to chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama. And Maharaj's eyes just were so big. And the expression on his face was like the most innocent, pure-hearted, simple little cowherd boy. He was just gazing at me and he was chanting along with me, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. And tears started flowing from his eyes as we were just chanting the Maha Mantra together. And it became such an emotional experience. We were holding hands. He took my hand, and this is the first time anyone's ever done this to me. He kissed my hand. Then he looked at me with these childlike eyes pouring tears and shook his head and said, Maharaj, isn't this wonderful? And then he just leaned his head back and, as if he was in ecstasy, just shook his head with a beautiful blossom smile. Then again he opened his eyes and he said, Maharaj, it doesn't get any better than this. I would not change my position for anyone else in the world. And he said, this is amazing. It's so wonderful. He said, but what's so amazing is it gets better every day. Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj Ki. Thakur Bhaktivinoda explains the essence of religion is compassion to the fallen souls and complete absorption in the holy name of Krishna. Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj was a man of essence, a man of true substance. And for all of you who are his most fortunate, beloved disciples and followers, on this day, I want to place my head in the dust of your feet and congratulate you for your supreme fortune. On the disappearance day of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur in Los Angeles, California, Srila Prabhupada gave a lecture narrating several incidences of his personal relationship with his Guru Maharaj. From their first meeting to the disappearance of his Guru Maharaj from this world, Prabhupada started becoming very emotional. And he concluded his lecture with these words. On the tape, and it is there, you could listen, you can hear his voice choking up. He said, "I am very old. I could leave this world at any time. But all of you are very, very young." And Prabhupada pleaded. He pleaded with all of us. He said, "Please, I may die any moment. Please carry on the mission of my Guru Maharaj." Prabhupada appealed, weeping and crying, "Please carry on the mission of my Guru Maharaj." Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj, he gave his life, his soul, his everything for that purpose, to carry on Srila Prabhupada's mission. My very sincere and humble request to all of the fortunate and divinely blessed disciples, search deeply within your heart. Without duplicity, and try to really understand what your Guru Maharaj really wants. What is his mission? Tears in his eyes, he's begging all of you to help him to carry on the mission of Srila Prabhupada's life's work. And in doing so, the tears of separation, which will get more painful over the years. In material world, when someone dies, we try to console them and say, "You'll get over it. You'll get over it in time." But in Krishna consciousness, please never get over it. Let that pain get deeper and deeper and deeper as time goes by. The pain of separation. And in that you will feel the greatest happiness of spiritual love. Thank you very much.
His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj ki. His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj ki. His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj ki. His Holiness Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj ki. Very good, Hari Bol. So we'll continue the program after lunch. Lunch is scheduled now. It was scheduled at 2, but we're a little bit late. And we will return, now it's 2:30, we were supposed to return at 4, so we'll return at 4:30. With His Holiness Amir Vilas Maharaj. He came in a little late. We apologize. We're trying to keep the program a little contained.